there were a couple shout-outs for you, and was to get an Oscar nomination for your performance at...
That was, that plat that I put in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was very kind.
Hey, Colin,
how do you get into the mindset of a character like this who not only is he not human, but he really doesn't want to be human?
No, yeah, he had no desire to. It was complete kind of trying to just imagine a world where you're completely severed from your basic and most commonly referred to human virtues and characteristics, you know, fear, remorse, compassion, hope, love. All these ideas were things that Jerry understood objectively how to be a human once, but also more than that, being an observer of human behavior over a matter of centuries. But it really was committing to that idea that this was a vampire that had no human leanings at all, had no desire, anything, he had disdain for human beings, he had disdain for them, and had a certain hubris as a result of that disdain, and as a result of the strength that inevitably brings him down. But in one sense, it was liberating, in another sense, it kind of almost got repetitive at times, because without these human things that we're used to pulling and pushing inside us, it was kind of like, you know, kind of they ran the risk of being one note, and one hopes it wasn't that, you know.
Have you been in something? I cannot remember where you've used the prosthetics and the contacts and the teeth, and I don't think so.
No.
So did that help your performance, or you just think the whole time, God, I can't wait to get this off because it's uncomfortable?
No, really. Yeah.
Really helped my performance.
I mean, yeah, I was
the contacts.
Get this no, really did.
Relax.
I mean, I'm a sucker for all things practical.
Okay.
You know, I really am. On a film set, whether it's, you know, even I'm doing a film now, there's a lot of green screen in it, but the green screen is 40 yards away in the background, and it'll be create this world of incredible grandiosity and detail. But the world that I'm in, 40, 50 yards in front of the green screen, is a practical set that's been built by amazing craftsmen. So it's not like I'm working with a tennis ball as Jar Jar Binks or anything. And with that in mind, you know, getting this practical, there was some CGI done as well, but anytime the practical mic was on, it really does help, and it's kind of like mask work as well. It kind of liberates you in a really kind of scary way. It's very powerful when you put something over your face and you just have your eyes. And
then I guess you look yourself in the mirror and freak out.
it really does affect how you move instantly. As soon as you see something, there is some connection that you may not be able to intellectually break down, but there is some kind of connection, some synapse go off in the head, and you begin to react and behave a certain way, and that might not be the right way to follow. Maybe you have to stop that and more clinically alter behavior, or maybe just go with it. But it was fun. In this case, it really was.
Chris Randon was in here and told us that as a gift, when he came on set, you gave him a copy of Carl Theodor Dreyer's Vampire.
Yeah.
Was that movie important to you in this film, or...?
No, it was something that I came to... Wait, yeah, no, absolutely. It was something that I came to just before we left to do Fright Night. I was in a bookstore in Santa Monica, and there was a DVD section. I was looking at it, and it was there. And so that was by chance. I didn't know about the film until I saw it in a big box set. And I got it, and then before I got the chance to open it, I met Chris, and it seemed like I was giving a film I hadn't even watched. And then I got it. But I knew by holding it, I knew by looking at it, I knew by the director's name,
yes,
and that it had stood the test of so many decades, that it was worthwhile. And then I subsequently got a copy myself and checked it out. But there was so many vampire films that I had seen growing up as a child, whether they were this, I loved this in its original form, The Lost Boys, Near Dark, many incarnations of Dracula, you know, Nosferatu, Coppola's Dracula, Mary Oldman, and so many, that they were all in my collective imagination, you know, and informed, you know, The Interview with the Vampire informed in some way what I did with Jerry, you know.
The original film, this is for Craig, I guess the original film sort of had the feel to itself as far as vampires go. You're coming into probably one of the most crowded eras in history in terms of vampire movies. How do you stay true to your vision and what you want to do while still acknowledging the fact that there's Twilight and there's True Blood and these other...
There's a vague reference to that, but, I mean, honestly, it's like I always judge material purely by the script and try and keep all those other factors out of it. Although, that being said, when I heard it was a vampire movie, I didn't really want to pick the script up. But I did, just because I was going in for a general at DreamWorks, and it was a script that they had, so I was curious about that. I read it, and it's such a great read that Marty had. And the thing that caught me, which is refreshing and more of an homage to the 80s was that mix of horror and comedy, which, you know, in American Werewolf in London and Friday Night, and even, like, you know, Freddy Krueger's character, it's like there's a sense of humor about them that you sort of lose in horror these days. It's just flat out horror. And I love that opportunity. Plus, the way the vampire is written is ruthless. And it's just kind of, it's like, my immediate thought, particularly with that early scene where he's got the, you know, the hidden rooms upstairs, is he's kind of like a serial killer. And it was this really interesting take on a vampire, just the practicalities of how they would actually have to survive in our world, that I thought would be really fun. And so I sort of really honed in on that post.
But it's interesting, too, because we're talking earlier about that fine line, which made that choice, or in comedy mix. You have to look at each character and say, which movie are they in?
Right.
Anton's in one movie, Colin's in another movie. They're all basically, have their characters have to be strong enough that you can get both jives going at
yeah,
both it's,
casting's critical. I mean, and you have to be able to cast people that can walk that line. And it's not everyone that can actually, you know, be invested in their character and their motivation and still some way of finding humor in the scene. And it varies. Like, Colin, honestly, was mostly the heavy stuff in the film, the horror, the threat. It was really important. And what Colin did so great and wonderfully was that he has a sense of humor about himself. And he's a sense of enjoyment about what he's doing, even though it's so pathological with it. And that's what makes him fun to watch, and any villain fun to watch. Chris and David are much more of the comic relief, but what was refreshing with both of them was that they were really grounded emotionally, and you could see their pathos and where they hurt. So they still had to have it, and then there's a balance of that. But overall, I said to the studio, it's got to be, it's a horror film first, and then we'll figure out how much humor we put in.
It sounds like, from what you said, were you not familiar with the original when you got the script, or did they just not
come to the script? No, I was not. I mean, I was aware of it. I had that iconic image of Amy from the original, but I hadn't seen it since 1986. And
since it hit video.
Yeah. And I really didn't remember. I knew it was A Neighbor Next Door, and that's about as much as I remembered of it. And I didn't want to look at it until we were about 2 weeks out from shooting. And we basically figured out, you know, all the structure and the character arcs. And then I went back and I wanted to check it out and make sure we could pay homage to it, you know, in certain ways that the fans would appreciate. One of those was the apple.
Yeah.
And certain lines in the film. And then, I mean, there's obviously structurally some very, you know, key moments like the nightclub that are in the original. But it is quite dramatically different in terms of structure.
Was there anything you put in specifically?
The apple,
which is literally on the
day. On the day, the apple, because originally I was supposed to come back from, like, away, and Anton's Charlie sneaks into the house, and when I come back with a bag, and it was kind of like he'd been to the groceries, and I was kind of like, whoa, fucking, I was like, I had this image of Jerry the vampire with, like, a quart of milk, sliced pan of bread, and I was like, can we not, this amazing place for the apple, the original, you know, but of course I had no watcher, no keeper to throw the apple, because the scene, of course, in the original is Jerry runs down the stairs, the apple, you know. I was like, so I had to throw it to myself. The only way to do that, rather than juggle with one apple, is to roll it off the table and catch it and have it became that. So that was just a nod of the head. And there were other things like lines that were carried over. The presence of Chris Sarandon was one of the great nods.
Colin, can you talk a little bit about working with Imogen? Because you guys are a hot couple. For the brief time you have together, it works really well. Does she work in a totally different way than you? Or how did you guys enjoy doing your scenes?
This film was a lot of fun to shoot. We were really like, it felt like a very tight-knit collection of film fans who were really getting the chance to kind of, you know, play out some wish fulfillments in a way. You know, it was a wonderful story. We all engaged with the story. I was a lover of the original. I don't know about the various other cast members, but I know I was 8 when the original came out, 9 when the original came out. I remember seeing it a year later on Betamax, or I think it might have been Betamax, VHS nearly. But it was very much, you know, everyone did their work, whatever work they did individually. And even I looked into, you know,
character backstory, and it gets a bit funky trying to, you know, get into vampire logic and shit.
It's Mediterranean Earth.
Mediterranean, 400 years old, and, you know, he was in Versailles, and then he was in, you know, Paris, and maybe got drunk with Hemingway one day. You just go to town on it, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe he speaks nine languages, and he was in China, and what boat did he come to America on, you know. But at the end of the day, then we all got to the set, all the actors, and everyone kind of had a very firm understanding of what they were doing and what their kind of archetypal purpose was, because every character in the film is an archetype. You know, every character in the film had a particular purpose. As Craig said, mine was the horror and that kind of weight. Chris and Dave Town was more the comedic resonance of the film, and Anton was the emotional core. Amy very much the same. And we just got on the set and just had a blast, just bounced off each other. It was really just fun, and tried to keep it loose, and tried to allow, you know, for a situation where everything could be a little bit different, and, you know, how much to push it, how much to push the vampire thing for me, and how much to bring it back, you know. I ended up at times slipping into kind of a Transylvanian accent, where I don't know what people from Transylvania sound like, but, you know, a Count Dracula. Because I'm a film fan, so it's like all the other
Street.
Oh, an English actor.
It was cool, okay.
Oh, yeah. It's fun working with Imogen. She's a wonderful actress and a great lady.
Along those lines, you've got clearly a path to this character, and he clearly has a plan for what he's doing in this area. How do you decide how much of that to reveal in the film, and how much of that to sort of let the mystery be? And is that a dynamic between the two of you when you're working? You both input to that, or is that just...
Sorry, in terms of the plan, what do you mean, like...
Well, he's got this army underneath him,
right.
A little bit. It's but
really
he's building an army.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
How much of that is in place, and then how much of that do you decide? Well,
it's hard to sort of obviously have that build and be winging it on the day. So there's certainly key points in my script that gave that information away, and it's like, I love, you know, when you're dealing with that, to give as little as possible and have some respect for the audience, that they got to, you know, if they're engaged in the movie, they got to pay attention and look for those little nuggets of clues of what's going on. So even once I do the movie, then I'll go back and strip it down to the bare necessity of information that people need to track what's going on, because you don't want to dumb it down and, you know, make people, you know, be spoon-fed, because then I think they just start to get ahead of it. So it was always the how little can we get away with? Can we take that out here and just, you know, we find out about that a little bit later? It's playing with a lot of the edit there.
Was the mental transition difficult for you when, like, from going from the horrible bosses comedy to the horror, you know, Fright Night? What was that like?
It was fun. It was fun. I mean, they were, both of them were kind of flick a switch characters nearly. Do you know what I mean? They were. I'd done a good bit of work on both of them, but they were so extremely different from, I hope, from the way that there was kind of just, you know, there were these shadows created, and you just kind of step into the shadow, and step out of the shadow and go home, and didn't end up bringing the work home because there wasn't so much kind of emotional resonance. You know, the parts that are more dramatic and that have a great emotional resonance are the parts that tend to echo into the evening and into the night and into your sleep and stuff like that. It wasn't so much horrible boss, it was only a 5-day shoot, so it was fun. It seemed like a really condensed period of make-believe, like just childish make-believe. It was a lot of fun, and I'd done like 3 or 4 years of dramatic roles in dramatic films, which were incredibly creatively satisfying, and I want to ideally mix, you know, stuff that has more depth and stuff that seems more superficial, and, you know, the idea to and then this, but it was time to just go and have a laugh. It felt like time, and both these films kind of offered that up, you know.
Can you talk about the 3D film? Like,
you know, 3D came up very early on. Like, first meeting at DreamWorks, we were talking about 3D, and I thought about it for a beat. And there's been these, you know, tentpole movies, Avatar, Alice in Wonderland, which are just spectacular in 3D. And so at first I was a little reluctant, but then I thought, it'd be really interesting to see two guys standing in a kitchen in 3D in a horror film, because there's this sense of always wanting to look around corners or over somebody's shoulder, and so we really focus on just feeling like we're in the space. and that you're in that room and not constantly drawing your attention to it, but just making it feel like you're immersed in that world. And part of 3D that was fun in that sense too is it almost makes you shoot in a more classic way, because you can't do handheld, it can't be too phonetic, or it just hurts. You know, it just starts to become strange, so you go back to more classic filmmaking with like these big long dolly moves, and the actors get to work in the space, and you get to feel like you're in that space with them.
So we're working, Colin, for you. Have you done a 3D before?
No.
So was there any blocking or anything that's weird?
No, no, it was more the technical aspect of it was something that I led other heads to wrestle with. You know, really, it didn't change much for us. I mean, the process was slowed down a little bit, but the process of making a film was so erratic in its pacing anyway. It's really slow some days, it's really fast others, that it didn't really notice the difference.